Welcome to the golf edition of Hooked on Sport. This is South Australia's Summer Golf Wrap, where we uncover the stories, personalities and moments that define golf across South Australia and beyond. It's time to talk golf with sports commentator Ben Hook and State Golf Representative Sophie Hilditch.
Good on you, Wallace. Welcome to another episode of Hooked on Sport. Ben Hook with you. Sophie Hilditch is with me. And Sophie, a tiny bit of a different background to what I'm accustomed to as I look down my computer screen at you. Where do we find you on this lovely Wednesday afternoon?
Well, I am in the lovely London. I'm over here for a bit of, well, my daytime job. I'm over here doing a little bit of work, but also mainly just having a bit of a holiday. So, yeah, different background. You don't have the fan in the background, which I'm kind of missing, actually.
Well, I've got your golf club in the background. I'm in the boardroom of Royal Adelaide Golf Club here. So we're both on the road a little bit. It must be very early in the morning over there. You've got yourself out of bed bright and early to catch up with your old mate Hookie.
Yeah, it's absolutely incredibly early. I'm half asleep, so I'm interested to see how this podcast is going to end up. But I have been watching lots of golf. But I will say it's been so hard to actually get the golf on whilst I've been over in the UK because it falls slam bang in the middle of our night. And actually being in Australia for the first time ever for US golf would have been brilliant.
Well, it was perfect timing, and we'll get to the US Women's Open. But Sunday morning, the last tee time was 7:15 in the morning. It was absolutely perfect. It was like golf over brunch. That was a wonderful experience. We will get to that, but we always like to start the show, Soph, with Sophie Starr.
Well, Sophie Starr for me, I'm actually going to have to go the amateur Sarah Hammett. Now, I know Sophie Starr is normally going off to someone who's, you know, qualified first, hit a world record, but for me, she missed the cut at the US Open this week, but it was her debut. She got there by qualifying, which is incredibly difficult to do. She's beat so many professional golfers to get there, and I think that's just an incredible experience of her. I know the Aussie golfers would have been looking after her, the Hannah Greens, the Steph Kyriakou. So incredibly proud. I think it's a massive achievement even to be in that field.
Very good, Soph. Yeah, you would have probably played a few amateur tournaments where she was involved.
I did. I never was in the same group as her. Funny enough, I think I fell a little bit behind in the tee group. She's an incredible player, hits it an absolute mile. She's a lot taller than me too, Ben. She'd have to look completely just down at me to try and find me in the field.
Good on you, Soph. That's a wonderful Sophie Starr. Ben's best moves away from golf. I just want to recognise Jackson Stock and what he has done in Australian lacrosse. He is a two-time winner of the Memorial Medal, which is essentially like the McGarry Medal or the Bradman Medal. So for the best and fairest player in the South Australian Premier League competition. But he represented South Australia at the Senior National Championships, which were in Adelaide last week. They started off at Sturt, and the weather up at Eden Hills was so poor that they moved the finals to Woodville. So pretty unfortunate for Sturt, although they handled that very well, and it's great that they take on these tournaments. Anyway, South Australia have won in the men, and Jackson Stock, who is like a fringe Australian player, was named as the player of the tournament. So really talented young South Australian, going places, and who knows, could be the sort of guy, might be a bit soon for him, 2028, but the sort of guy with the way he plays could be very, very effective in the Olympic form of the game, and who knows, we might see him at the Olympics in 2032. So Jackson Stock is Ben's best for this week. Sophie, and I don't even know if you've caught up with the news because it's probably most of this has been released while you've been in bed overnight over there in London, but some massive news here in South Australia that the PGA Tour is going to partner with the DP World Tour to, I guess, enhance the footprint of the Capital.com Australian Open. And the Australian Open is coming to South Australia in 2028, and so the Adelaide event will be the beneficiaries of that. First of all, have you caught up with that news? And if you have, how exciting is it?
Well, I woke up to the news, Ben. You're dead right. So I've had about 10 minutes to process it, so you're getting my thoughts straight off the bat. But I'm so excited. I think it's incredible that the PGA and the DP World Tour is pairing up with the Aussie Open. We've always struggled getting those big names. We obviously had Rory McIlroy last year, and he's coming back for Kingston Heath this year. And we always tend to have one big name maybe appearing. We've had obviously Jordan Spieth in the past. So I'm excited because normally it's our purses. I mean, our purse is about 2 million AUD and just your normal PGA event is about 8 to 9 million US. And big players aren't going to carve out the time to come down to Australia to play when the purse just isn't there and it's not really worth them to head on down. So I'm so excited. I know the CEO of the PGA, Brian Rolapp, is trying to, you know, condense their season a little bit more so that the players can go back home to countries if they're not a US-based player and play in their national tournament. So I think this is an excellent start. And they haven't said in the news reports that I've seen that, you know, what the purse increase might be or if there even will be a purse increase. But I anticipate with the PGA joining on, there will be a bit of a purse increase and hopefully some bigger names coming across.
Yeah, I think you're right, Soph. I think you'll see it be elevated to one of the more high-profile DP World Tour events. I don't know if it'll marry up with one of the top-end PGA Tour events, but certainly the prize money, I expect, is going to be doubled, maybe a little bit beyond that, which is tremendously exciting because it will attract a bigger field. I do think there was some strategy at play here. LIV Golf has clearly been eyeing off as maybe a means to try and re-establish itself in a different format in the coming years to get involved with national opens. It's probably something in hindsight that would have been a really smart play regardless. But I feel like this is a big strategy by the PGA Tour. They know that LIV is teetering on the brink, and that's probably something that we'll discuss over the course of the next few minutes. So, yes, great for South Australia, great for the Australian Open. It's going to, once the Rory McIlroy sugar hit moves on, I think it's a great opportunity for the Australian Open to really establish itself or re-establish itself as one of the big tournaments around the world. I don't think it's going to be return to that status as the fifth major that Jack Nicklaus and Gary Player and Arnold Palmer liked to give it back in the 60s and 70s. But certainly if we can see it have its own schedule window, I think that's really important, Sophie. I wouldn't be surprised if we see it maybe move to January rather than November, December. There's going to be less golf played in the PGA Tour in that early part of the year. They've already talked about their schedule moving to sort of a mid-late February start. So there are some opportunities for some golf in its own right here in Australia in its own window. And with no PGA Tour on, it may very well be that a number of the fringe PGA Tour players, if you like, may well come down here and try and land some rankings points as well as some cash. So, yeah, going to be huge. And I guess another fillip for South Australia, what Peter Malinauskas has done by ploughing ahead with the North Adelaide Golf Course redevelopment and signing up for more tournaments over and above LIV. We have to say, though, Soph, this has all happened because of LIV. This has all happened because of what has gone on with LIV at the Grange. And we can't escape the fact that LIV has been so massive for South Australian and Australian golf. And here we are now talking about the PGA Tour partnering up with the Australian Open to bring this event to a new course in Adelaide. You just tick all of those boxes and all of them do stretch back to LIV. So it is, it's been really wonderful news. And let's just hope we can continue to build on that. And maybe 5-10 years time, we can see this becoming one of the really important golf tournaments of the calendar. So it's been a massive week over here as well for local golf because we had three South Australians involved in golf earn King's Birthday honours. So this all played out again while you were probably didn't even get the public holiday that we enjoyed here on the Monday, but it was absolutely huge. I'm sure you know what I'm talking about here, but Nick McCormack, a PGA professional for 55 years, received the Medal of the Order of Australia. And Joan Lyons and Didi McLaurin, who I know you would know very well, were made members of the Order of Australia. I can tell you a little bit of the story about Joan and Didi, but maybe just your own reflections on the time that you've spent with them and their influence they've had on golf and women's golf at Royal Adelaide.
Yeah, Joan and Didi, I absolutely love those two. They're incredible members of Royal Adelaide Golf Club, but they're also incredible members of South Australian golf industry just in general. I know they currently have a trophy. I think it's the McLaurin Lions Trophy, and it's for Junior Development Growth in Royal Adelaide. And I'm hoping I've got that name in the right order. I don't want to bugger off Didi or Joan. I hope that's in the right order, but they're doing so much incredible things for women's golf in Royal Adelaide, but also just broadly. I know they had a massive factor in my own development as a junior golfer. I think it was Didi was one of my first ever pennant managers, and Joan and Didi just come as a duo. If Didi's there, Joan's there. I still remember Didi's protein balls getting me through pennant matches, but it was really their encouragement. I was a hockey player, Ben, so I had no idea what I was doing on a golf course. I didn't know golf course etiquette. I didn't know what to wear on a golf course. And it was women like Didi and Joan who encouraged me to keep coming out. They made me feel so comfortable. And I think there's so many women out there that play golf now and that are wanting to get into golf that will run into people like Joan and Didi, and they will feel the exact same that I did, and will step on in it because of women like that.
Didi made an extraordinary contribution in New South Wales before moving back to South Australia later in life. Joan Lyons was routinely the manager of the team for South Australian travelling teams and also Australian travelling teams, did all of that on a voluntary basis. Not only is their contribution to golf profound, they're very heavily invested in the arts. They support the Adelaide Symphony Orchestra and a number of artistic endeavours. So they are wonderful South Australians, and it was great to see them recognised. Nick McCormick as well, 55 years as a member of the PGA. He's had an incredible career with Grange, but his claim to fame, Soph, and this is really important and you'll understand this, is he was the one who established golf in the school sport physical education program. So without Nick, it's probably unlikely that kids would turn up to school and do a PE class and get the opportunity to play any golf. So I think we all understand how just getting exposed to that at school lends itself to maybe kids then thinking, oh, this is a game that I'd like to take up. And Nick is the grandfather of that. It's an incredible legacy that he has left. So all three of them richly deserved. We're very, very proud of them indeed. So if I can move on and talk about LIV Golf Andalusia, in particular because our own Wade Ormsby got a start in the final round. He played for the Southern Guards, which is the South African team. I think they're nicknamed the Rhinos. It is a bit bizarre, isn't it? I think that's maybe about the fifth or sixth team that Wade has lined up for over the journey. But great that he gets those opportunities. Still is our number one professional player, in my opinion. I know Jack Thompson and Jack Buchanan are snapping at his heels, but it was fantastic to see him get that opportunity.
Yeah, definitely fantastic. I love watching Wade play golf. He's not the biggest hitter, but his short game is always incredible. I was actually warming up. Well, not warming up. I was just hitting balls next to him only a few weeks ago. And he was talking to me about what his next plans look like and what his weeks were looking like. But it definitely didn't involve LIV Golf. So I'm sure he was very excited to get that call up.
Yeah, he didn't have his best time out there. I think 11 over for the two rounds that he played. The winner was Tyrrell Hatton. Andalusia's always been a very, very difficult course. The one knock that we have had on LIV Golf this year in particular is that the setups have been very, very easy. You don't get that at Andalusia. So Tyrrell Hatton wins by two, a new dad. And it was Legion 13 who took out the team's event. Of course, John Rahm was two strokes back in second place. So Tyrrell Hatton, gee, he's a guy who I think, in spite of where he's playing, he's got 8 weeks off now. I mean, that is bizarre, isn't it, with LIV Golf taking all of this time off. But he is still someone that I think is an absolute threat to win a major. I don't know where you see it, but he's certainly still one of those guys that I think, even though his ranking will be way down, is probably top 15, top 20 in the world.
Yeah, Tyrrell Hatton hasn't, in my view, a lot of the golfers that have gone to LIV have kind of teetered and, you know, kind of hit this like neutral zone where they're guaranteed money and they're just in neutral gear. But Tyrrell Hatton looks like he's been working on his game, and if anything, it's actually improved whilst he's been on the LIV tour. He's been playing majors and been playing unbelievable. So, I mean, we don't know what the future of LIV Golf looks like, but I'm really hoping to see Tyrrell Hatton back on the PGA Tour.
He's listed as ranked 39 in the world on the data golf rankings. And we understand that the world golf rankings really don't mean anything anymore because the LIV players just haven't been picking up points. I know they're starting to get some now. But Tyrrell Hatton at 39 in the world, I reckon he's maybe, yeah, I've got him probably 10 to 15 spots higher than that. So that's a big win for him. And I look forward to seeing how he tracks at the US Open, which is coming up in a couple of weeks' time. So let's get straight into it. US Women's Open. Nelly Korda, the number one player in the world, wins by one stroke. She plays a superb back nine on Sunday in very, very difficult conditions. Eight pars with a birdie on the 17th. She yipped a putt in the left side in to win the tournament on 18. A wonderful performance in a wonderful tournament at a wonderful course. What did you make of it?
This course and this tournament absolutely absolutely delivered for me. It's exactly what I wanted from the US Open, and knowing that it was going to Riviera, it's what we expected. It's what we anticipated in our lead-up podcast, and it did not disappoint. Though that last putt from Nelly Korda, I was watching it live, and, you know, I'm half asleep. And I'm sitting there thinking, oh my, I'm already preparing for the playoff. I saw it straight off the face. It looked like she'd yanked it left. And I'm pretty sure it's a putt that broke left. And I was like, okay, playoff, here it is. And even when it's the slow-mo and you see the ball going around the lip, I'm like, I have no idea how that ball has gone in. Particularly the way that Nelly had been putting this entire tournament was absolutely impeccable. She was hitting middle of the cup. In fact, it was the 17th hole, the birdie that you mentioned, which was an absolute deal breaker for me. She didn't have her best ball striking for the entirety of the tournament. Now, with that being said, I still think she fell in the top 20 for strokes gained with ball striking. But for that, for Nelly Korda, she's normally sitting, you know, if not number one, somewhere pretty close. So she was chipping and putting unbelievably. And Nelly is known to not be the best of putters. So on 17, she'd missed the green, making the green in two, chipped it to about, I want to say, like 8 or 7 foot. And I thought, I was sitting in bed thinking, if she drains this putt, she wins the US Open. That's that kind of putt that you just know that's what it means. And she's put that dead center. And I think it was just incredibly incredible. It showed the guts. It showed how much it meant to Nelly. So I'm thrilled that that last putt went in for her, but God, did I think we were heading down a playoff. And I don't think I would have wanted to be in a playoff against Charlie Hall and Gabby Lopez, who were absolutely flames on the weekend. I mean, when the leaders reached that turn after nine holes, there were four players on 7-under, Ben. It was unbelievable.
Yep. Yeah, no, it's spot on, it was, and you're right. And it just looked like Charlie Hull was in that mood where get her in a playoff, one hole, she's just going to fire the driver as hard as she can down the fairway, and she's going to be going for the flag no matter what. And that may not come off, but it might. And you might play a really good hole, make a good solid four, but Charlie's hit it in tight, and that's the end of the tournament. And you're absolutely right, Soph. I watched that putt. I mean, it was a great camera angle, and I called out, oh, my God, as it left her club face, because that looked like it was not going in for anything. And how it fell in, it actually reminded me, Soph, of the 2008 US Open, where Tiger had about a 10-foot putt at Torrey Pines to get it into a playoff with Rocco Mediate. Mm-hmm. And that putt never once looked like it was supposed to go in and somehow fell in the side. And, you know, that's just that little bit of magic dust that Tiger Woods in the men's tournaments and Nelly Korda has in the women's tournaments, does she? Just to somehow work out a way that falls in when it never looked like it was supposed to. And two things stood out to me. One was that she shows no emotion at any time on the golf course, but that putt you referred to on 17 for the birdie is about 10, 12 feet. She gave a couple of fist pumps there, and that is the most un-Nelly-like I've ever seen. So we knew that meant a lot to her. And then when she finally overcame the fact that she'd hit that diabolically poor putt, but it still went in, and just how overwhelmed she was to know that she was a US Open winner. We know that this was the one tournament that has eluded her. There hasn't been, I probably got to put Minji Lee in this. There hasn't been a lot of big name winners of the US Open back since Michelle Wee won it in 2014. I think you've probably got to go back that far. As you've referenced in the past, Minji Lee won it in 2022. But this was great for the tournament that the number one player in the world, an American on home soil, got it done and just showed all of that emotion of how much it meant to her as well.
I think it's great for women's golf. It's incredible to have someone like the world number one actually finally getting the US Open. It means she's got four majors to her belt. Now, the women have five majors. To win the Grand Slam for the women, they normally say you still got to win four out of five, and she's only got three of them. She's won the Chevron twice. So the US Open is massive for her, and she's won the first two majors in a row for this season. Now, that's incredible. That's just was not unheard of. Because Imbie Park has, I think, won three majors in a row at the starting of the season. I could be wrong with that stat, but she was pretty close to that, maybe in 2013. But Nelly Korda, this is absolutely incredible. I am very much looking forward to her competing in about 3 weeks' time at the women's next major. She's in absolutely stunning form. I think the crowds were big at Riviera as well. It was showing that where the women's game is and that it is just an amazing game to watch. And sometimes I hate to say it, but better to watch than the men's because it's a bit more relatable. And they set up Riviera like that. Like, I thought they'd set up the 10th to make it just drivable the whole way, but for the first 2 days they actually set them back a little bit and they had mid-irons coming in, and it's what members would be used to seeing, and it's such a slick green and hard green to hit. And we spoke about it in the lead-up and I was interested to see what they would do with the 10th hole, because for the men it's, you know, it's drivable or it's just a wedge, but for the women, no, they set them further back and they made them, you know, play it like a member actually would play it. And I thought it added a bit more strategy and it made it a US Open. I mean, all those leaders, if you look at their putting stats, if you look at the scrambling stats, they weren't always hitting greens because it's pretty hard to do that in the US Open as it should be, as it was at Riviera. And you look at, I mean, you have to look at Nelly's scrambling stats. They were unbelievable. It didn't just include, I think she, I can't remember, on the weekend, I think she almost made 14 out of 15 up and downs or something ridiculous. And that's why she's standing where she is, because her short game was unbelievable, and that's what I find makes an interesting golf tournament. I mean, I don't know about you, but we have to speak about Charlie Hull. That's now five runners up in majors. I'm starting to feel a little bit bad for her, and I did feel bad for her with this one. She must have been looking in the scorer's heart, watching Nelly's putt, thinking, I'm on here, I've got a playoff. And you said it correctly, Charlie's known to be aggressive, and she had a really bad first 2 days, and I feel like she's almost like a caged lion when it's coming to that, and she's just holding on for dear life. And then all of a sudden she makes the cut, and it's like her caddy just turns to her and goes, all right, go at absolutely everything. And this Sunday, she eagles the first hole, almost aces the sixth hole, and by the turn, she's sitting right up there through with the leader, having been three back when she first started. She was incredible, but I'm almost likening her, and I know there's been a lot of comment about this, to Fleetwood. She needs that major, yes. Ben. It's like the monkey on the back. She just needs it desperately.
Or a Lee Westwood as well. Another golfer from England who has routinely competed and contended in majors but never quite got the job done. Can we just touch on the Australians very briefly? Steph Kyriakou, like Sarah Hammett, missed the cut. She was one under through the first 18. And then all of those challenges that she's had this year came home to roost once again. She was a 7 over 78 in the second round and missed the cut. The other four Australians, you could have thrown a blanket over them, Soph. So Grace Kim and Karis Davidson finished at 2 over. And the two big names, Hannah Green and Minji Lee, 3 over. Your thoughts on those four?
Look, I was expecting a little bit more from Hannah Green. I was pretty disappointed. Her driver just wasn't on, and that's one of Hannah's main strengths. So I know she struggled a little bit. It means you're coming out of the rough, and the rough at Riviera. You saw Nelly on the front nine on Sunday really struggling with it. She was missing fairways to begin with, and that's where her chipping really came to show, because it just meant trying to choose a club, wondering whether or not you were going to get a jumper. Even if you did hit the greens, they were pretty slick. You were bouncing through. And so unfortunately for Hannah Green, that just meant that she could not quite get it going. She couldn't get close enough to pins, and that was a bit of a disappointment. Karis Davidson, on the other hand, so impressed with her. That was unbelievable. Her first round, I think she was sitting 2 under and was leading the Australian pack. Incredible golf, a bit of a rocky Sunday, which is a bit disappointing to see. But look, Karis Davidson debuted, didn't know she'd be playing in this event, thought she'd have to be qualifying for it, and then the last tournament, the LPGA, she finds herself with a US Open ticket, and she goes out and does that. Absolutely incredible.
Yeah, no, it absolutely was. It was superb. Just before we wrap things up, I want to just get your thoughts on Se-young Kim in the 72nd hole. So she was in the group with Nelly Korda. She lost her drive a little bit right. She was in the rough. I didn't do the maths on it, but it was well in excess of 2 minutes. It took her to hit her ball. She was out of the tournament by this stage. She's still obviously trying to finish as well as she possibly can. But poor old Nelly Korda, who's playing for the trophy is in the fairway and had to wait. I feel like it was probably close to 3 minutes for Se-young Kim to hit the ball. I think it's worth just pointing out Se-young Kim isn't necessarily a slow player whatsoever, but took an inordinate amount of time to deal with this. Is it something that we should just accept because there was high stakes and it was the final hole of the tournament? Do we say, no, there should have been a penalty for this because it was well outside the guidelines of the time that you're allowed to take a stroke? Should we be disappointed in her because she made Nelly wait when Nelly had a heck of a lot more to play for than Se-young Kim did? Interested in your thoughts.
Well, I actually disagree with you when you say she didn't have anything to play for. She was sitting 6 under having to play that shot. She birdies it. She hit 7 under. That putt doesn't lip in. She's actually in a playoff, Ben. So I disagree that she was completely out of it. She was definitely still in it. I know Nelly was sitting in the middle of the fairway, but a 3-putt, as we saw, was on the cards and could have occurred, or she could have missed the green with the nerves of the US Open. So I disagree with you when you say there wasn't a lot to play for. I think she definitely still was in it. With that being said, slow play for me is just an absolute no-go. I mean, Nelly caught her. We've got to talk about how fast of a player she is, and she would never, ever do something like this. She's so quick and decisive. It's almost like her caddy and her are just on the complete same wavelength the whole time. Even when she was debating between clubs, she's well within that 40 seconds. She steps over that ball and hits it immediately. She's not known to be waiting. So I can imagine that that was a pretty frustrating thing for Nelly Korda, standing in the middle of the fairway and watching for this person, particularly, like as you said, she pars the hole like she did. She wins the tournament by one. So I imagine all she was thinking that whole time was hit the number, hit middle of the green. And it must have been playing on her mind a little bit when you're watching your opponent, you know, trying to make a decision in between clubs. And you can't say that that messes with your psyche a little bit. Obviously, it didn't. So good for Nelly, as she showed why she's world number one. Look, I don't think I'd be penalising her last hole of the day, but and she's not known to be a slow player. I think the people that are known to be slow, I want to see them penalised even more. But in this situation, Ben, I'm sitting on the side of I'd just let it go. I'd let it go to the side. But it is a bit annoying and it was frustrating to watch. And then particularly when she actually ended up hitting it. It's that classic, you know, when someone waits to, you know, they're thinking they can reach the green in two on a par five and they wait and they hit the absolute worst shot. And you just go to yourself, well, that wasn't worth the wait. That's exactly how I felt.
US Men's Open, of course, is ahead of us soon enough. So if it'll be played at Shinnecock Hills, one of the great courses of the United States. They had the longest day yesterday, which is the final the final of the qualifiers. It's a 36-hole event, all played in one day. I thought the interesting story was that there's two 17-year-olds who have got into the tournament. Not unusual in women's golf, very, very rare in men's golf. So Giuseppe Puebla, making his first US Open appearance, of course, alongside Miles Russell, both of them 17-year-olds who got in. Probably the biggest story to come out of there. In the US Tour, Soph, had the Memorial Tournament, of course, hosted by the great Jack Nicklaus. It was JT Poston who got it done on the second playoff hole over Ryan Gerrard. He's sneaky a real star, JT Poston. It's his fourth win on the PGA Tour. The last three have been not particularly big events. One was the Shriners, one was a lot of those sort of autumn events, if you like, but this is a big event, the Memorial. It's his biggest win of his career. He is a legitimate player. He's been on the tour now for 9 years, and generally guys of that ilk, you see them drop down to the Korn Ferry Tour for a year or two, but he's bounced back up and then bounced back up. But he's been, I think, on the PGA Tour now for 9 years, 4 wins. This is, as I said, undoubtedly his biggest one. Did you get an opportunity to have a look at this tournament?
I'm not going to lie, Hookie. I didn't watch this tournament as closely as I did for the US Women's Open, so I didn't get the biggest look out. I did see the playoff in the highlights, so I'm going to put my hands up and apologise to our listeners. I was watching the highlights for this event. I was too swamped with the LPGA and interested there. I did like to see, though, Alex Fitzpatrick at T6. Yes. There was so much talk about whether or not he deserved his position, and in all these signature events, he's just showing up. He's had so many top 15, top 10s, and I'm super impressed to see Alex Fitzpatrick. I watched him at the Aussie Open over at Royal Melbourne, and wow, is he a ball striker. Matt Fitzpatrick, his brother, said he was up for the challenge and actually held him during that Zurich pairs event to get that win. So Alex Fitzpatrick, impressive. Adam Scott, another one that I was thrilled to see at the top of a leaderboard. We haven't seen him there for a while at T12, 4 under. So look, no, interesting event. I always like watching this. I was on a bit of a Scotty Scheffler watching him struggle with his ball striking, hitting the driving range hours and hours after the tournament, particularly with the US Open around the corner. I'm curious to see what's going to go on there, because normally in the lead-up events, you start to see who you can imagine winning a US Open. And Scotty Scheffler, I mean, what? I think he still finished T12, but someone to look out for, because ball striking is a necessity when you're going and playing big events like the US Open.
Christopher Raitan was also in a tie for sixth. He came from the DP World Tour last year. Alex Fitzpatrick is up to world number 73. So it's pretty incredible what he has done, and or both of those guys, what they have done, and how that the link between the DP World Tour, don't know if it suits the DP World Tour that they lose their best players all the time, but this other avenue to get yourself into some pretty serious golf events on the PGA Tour is certainly working out very well for the players. So those guys wouldn't have got that opportunity 2 or 3 years ago, and here they both are now in signature events and performing exceptionally well. Just touch on very quickly, the Grange Golf Club is in the middle of its centenary. Last Saturday night, they had their extravaganza at the convention centre, hosted by Chris Dittmar. The guest speaker was Wade Ormsby. They had a band on. They had a great celebration. So it is just great to see these clubs celebrate in style. We know Cooyonga had theirs, 3 or 4 years ago? I think Glenelg is coming up maybe in another year or two from memory. I'm just thinking off the top of my head here. But congratulations to all of those at the Grange Golf Club who are making that celebration work as well as they are right now. Reagan Denton is still in the US, I believe. I'm hoping that you're up to date with what her latest is.
Well, an official Reagan watch, I think we're on at the moment, because she
That's
just
what we
keeps,
call it on the rundown.
Yeah, she just keeps competing and she keeps performing at all these US events. She actually just played the Women's Southern Amateur. She had rounds of +5, -6, +1 for a total of even par. An absolute roller coaster of a golf tournament for Reagan. But unlike us hackers, Ben, she has that 6 under just looming, waiting to happen to get us straight back in it. And that means she's finished T3 in another amateur event. Absolutely incredible and stamping her ground. I mean, just for our listeners, just to know how impressive the women's amateur golf is in the US Open, 4 amateurs made the cut, and they're all amateurs that Reagan happened to compete against at the Augusta Women's National Amateur. That's Kiara Romero, Maria Jose Marine, Aphrodite Deng, and Astrid Talley, who capped a 66 at the US Open. So that's how close Reagan actually is to be able to compete at that kind of level. When you think she finished 5th at Augusta's Women National Amateur against those kind of players, she's not far off, Hookie, which is a pretty scary thought to have.
So to wrap things up, I thought it would be worth just sharing with you the results from the South Australian Inclusive Championship in the men's gross. The great spud, Stephen Alderson, has taken out the tournament by 10 strokes from Lockie Smith. Now, Lockie Smith's a young lad who's come over from New South Wales for this event. So well done to spud. We would expect him to win in this sort of company, and he's done the business. In the women's Stableford, it was Tamsin Page who won by, looks like, 24 strokes from the runner-up, Nicola Roy. So she has had a good day out. In the men's Stableford competition, so this is for the slightly lower-ranked players, if you like. Christopher Perry has won that with 76 Stableford points across the two rounds. So he's won that by 12 strokes from William Byers. So I reckon that pretty much wraps us up.
Completely wraps us up, and I'm going to go explore London a little bit. So that was so much fun, Hooky, as always. Some incredible golf, some incredible news in South Australia, just booming as soon as I leave. It's like they knew I left, and all of a sudden all these news reports are just coming out with the Order of Merit and PGA joining up with the Aussie Open. What is this? I wanted a little bit of a break, Hooky.
Well, they tried to get it past you, but they failed. You were straight across it, as we would always expect. Soph, always appreciate your expertise and insight. Enjoy continuing your time off, although I know you're doing a fair bit of work as well. And hopefully we can find a time to link up with you once again next week, mate. All the best.
Sounds great. See you later, Hooky.
The last putt sunk, that's a wrap on this golf edition of Hooked on Sport. Thanks for listening. Help us meet more golfers just like you by following us and leaving a review. Look forward to your company on the next golf edition of Hooked on Sport.